Max Roach, his chorus and orchestra with It's Time, featuring trumpeter Richard Williams, tenor saxophonist Clifford Jordan, trombonist Julian Priester, pianist Mal Waldron, bassist Art Davis, and the vocal choir conducted by Coleridge Taylor Perkins. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and somehow that piece kind of spoke to me because it was just raw energy, frenetic and frantic, even angry at times. And basically, it sounded like a warning. It sounded like a plea, too. It's time. It's time. And by that I mean it's time for us to get off our butts. Stop making excuses. Stop rationalizing our laziness and our propensity to put things off and say, well, it will get done, meaning somebody else will do it. And the it is really the work we need to do for ourselves. We are in such serious trouble. I know I've been sounding kind of down, but I really am not down at all. I'm angry that we are wasting precious time with things that ultimately don't matter in the scheme of things. And we're seeing things passing before our eyes. We know that they're wrong. We know we ought to respond, but we're not responding. We are in a state. We're almost mesmerized. We're paralyzed. And we're not moving. And it is as if we have not enough incentive to move, when in fact the evidence points the other way. We have more than enough incentive to move in our own interests. Just today, the news in South Florida today is that 5 patients died in a nursing home. 2 more at a hospital. They had been in a nursing home literally for almost 7 days without electricity. These were very, very ill patients. And it is amazing to me that we don't see people, I mean, really outraged about this in this neck of the woods. They're still finding people in places like this, in conditions that are unbearable, and it shouldn't happen. In St. Thomas, in Puerto Rico, and throughout the Caribbean, people are suffering, suffering, suffering. And I don't see even the people on those respective islands. They don't have the energy. They don't have the energy to fight. And we're not seeing too many people fighting for them. I would think that in New York City, we would have a serious fallout to the way people are being treated. The fact that this incredible storm and people, New York's Puerto Rican community, is all blasé about it. What's wrong with you? What's wrong with the rest of us who see what is happening and we stuck? And we say, well, it's so sad, I feel for them. So what does that, your feeling for them, mean? If there's no energy behind it. Okay, so I covered some of this yesterday, so I don't want to repeat myself, except to say, we are in serious trouble, more so than you know, because we are not reacting. We're not reacting right. And this is my plea for all of us to really re-examine what activism means. And what do we see ourselves as doing in with regard to an activist life? Is it just showing up at community meetings? Is it attending lectures? Or is it fighting? The activism that I am talking about doesn't require you to hit the streets and go do crazy stuff. I'm talking about flexing the political muscle that you have to aid, to assist in the furtherance of human endeavors. To be a spokesperson, to be a partner in this effort that we talk about all the time as if we know it is happening. It isn't happening. It isn't happening. So I want to ask about that. I want to ask, why aren't we moving? Why aren't we making real our commitment to activism? We're just talking about it. It drives me nuts. On the other hand, when I hear what people are doing, what they are engaging in to further the human condition, improve the human condition, it's music to my ears. But we, as a whole, I'm not pointing fingers at any person in particular here, we are lazy. And we have relegated this thing called community activism to a comfortable little corner somewhere where intermittently we put ourselves in the way of doing, actually doing something. Something concrete, something that aids and abets the improvement of the human condition. And that's what activism is. It doesn't cost you anything, but it could if you have enough money to sustain a contribution and so forth. That's one thing, but I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about us as a community. We have become lazy. And we pick and choose what we want to do, but we're really not committed, fully committed to something. We talk about it. Well, apparently, I spoke too soon. I was just telling the operator on the boards that, well, they're working. They're working hard at improving things. And I was giving a lot of credit that apparently was not yet due, fully due. So, look, we're going to go through this period of hiccups. We are going to have hiccups. And it's okay. It's annoying when we lose each other, but it's not us. It's a system that understandably is trying to get back on an even keel. So there we go. But I come to this question really not in a sense of wagging a finger of blame, if you understand what I'm saying. I'm saying this is a great time for us to do some self-assessment with regard to this thing that we talk about all the time called activism. If we were to do some kind of inventory, what would the results show for ourselves rating ourselves? What would the results show? Would the results show that we really are okay? We're functioning. We're in good shape in that regard. Or are we just floating in and out, and our involvement is largely in our heads? Are we literally doing something? Like right now, in the city of New York, the entire activist community should show an extraordinary outpouring of help to the Puerto Rican community in this time. Activism requires activists to be mobilized with other activists from all throughout the Caribbean. We should have a network that should be responding. We should be present and accounted for. Nobody should have to ask us to help people who are part of our community. We should have people sending packages down, people in touch with other activists in that region. We may not be able to give on the level of some of these, the government or anything like that. That's not important. The important thing is to show up with purpose, to be present and accounted for. I don't see that. I don't see that at all, which tells me quite a few things. Possibly we don't have a network. Possibly we are not talking to each other. We don't have relationships with each other. We don't see the need to have relationships with each other. And we talk about how progressive we are. Some people even would say revolutionary. The true revolution is expressed now, when people don't have food or shelter. All of a sudden, we drop back and we let the government do its thing, which is good. I'm saying, are we present and accounted for in whatever way we could be helpful? Who is talking to whom in New York City? Which outside of Puerto Rico has the largest population of Puerto Ricans? Who's doing that? Who is coordinating help for Puerto Rico and the Virgin Islands and all these other islands that are affected in the Caribbean? These are our people. Where's the revolutionary sympathy there? So I ask us to do that kind of inventory and to be present and accounted for at a time of great need. You know, I was talking to somebody the other day. Here in Florida, there's a pretty sizable population of Bahamians. And the response was, well, the U.S. government is they're really trying to marshal help there. And that's true. But it doesn't. That's not the question I asked. Where is the help for Bahamians? On what basis? On the basis that they're suffering, but on the basis also of history. The Bahamian community was extremely active in the freeing of slaves. People don't know that. Any slave that ran south to Florida and were embraced by the Bahamian community, they protected them, declared them free outright. The Bahamian community developed South Florida. And because they did that, many slaves were freed. I don't care whether you know a Bahamian or not. And this is way beyond the storm. This is fellowship. And this is a way to say, thank you, we have not forgotten you, what you did for us. You must remember that the fight in America for freedom began in Florida. It was a Black and Native Americans effort. That's where the fight for freedom started, right here in South Florida. I see I will have to replay my good friend Jan Carew's tape discussing America's wars, and the first wars were fought right here. So you can't see your people suffering and not respond. We have all kinds of excuses as to why we can't, or why we don't, or why we won't. But I'm saying, if you are claiming, it doesn't matter what color you are, or what your ideological thing is, but if your propensity is toward activism, this is how you position yourself. You have to do something at a time of great need. You see? And you can't allow yourself not to be counted. You can't allow that. So we should be seeing flotillas of stuff going to Puerto Rico from Puerto Ricans. Puerto Puerto Ricans in New York have to take ownership of this. Of course, the government should help. Absolutely. The government's forced throughout the Caribbean, but Puerto Rico, as we have been discussing, has been forced into bankruptcy by the U.S. courts. And they have begun the process of auctioning off the entire island. It's all legal, after all it's done through the courts. But where are our people? There should be one huge conference going on. Because we know what's coming. I've been talking about it. Puerto Rico, for all intents and purposes, is done. They've got it. And it's all legal, of course, by the law. But your people are suffering and you're abandoning them. No, all progressive-minded people, all activists, should be very, very present and accounted for. Say, we're not going to abandon you. Not at a time like this. Bahamas, we're not going to forget what you did. Your role in freeing African slaves in this country. We're not going to forget that. We owe you a debt of gratitude. People talk about, well, the government and the news conferences are being held regularly to point to the fact that U.S. military planes are flying over this place and flying over to that place and they're dropping off. I don't care about that. I'm not listening to that. That's what they ought to do. That's their job. I am talking about there's no emotional connection here and no attempt at making it known, even if it were just symbolic, to say you are in trouble, you are our own. We are going to support you for the little that we have. Because that is what is owed. Now, then you can call yourself an activist and a revolutionary, or whatever it is you want to apply, fine. Because the truth is, the conditions that are being experienced now are becoming more and more universal. They chased them out of the Caribbean. They're going to chase them out of here. They chase them out of here. They're going to chase them out of the Caribbean. It's the same. It's the same experience. So today is National Inventory Soul Searching Day. And you have to ask yourselves some questions. Me too. We all have to ask ourselves some questions and be honest about it. Are we present and accounted for? Does this matter to us? Do we understand the enormity of what is going on and unfolding before our very eyes? If not, cancel your card, cancel your membership. You're out. You don't matter. You're not useful. You're operating under false pretenses. And we shouldn't have you in any club that says that they're about progressive action or revolutionary action. Yeah, when it comes time to take action, somehow you're heading for the bushes. You're heading for the tall grass. So, I'll take this short break. And when we come back, we will talk about this most recent insult to our collective dignity, and that is the pardoning, Jeff Sessions' decision yesterday, right after this. You're listening to Lead Stories on PRN.FM. I'm Eutrice Lead. U.S. Attorney General Jeff Sessions' announcement yesterday that his department will not prosecute six Baltimore officers who had been implicated in the controversial death of Freddie Gray 2 years ago. No question has triggered new rounds of criticism of preferential treatment of law enforcement officers in the criminal justice system. We've been around this corner many times. And I want to know from you today, thinking very strategically now, what is the meaning of this? Tell us what this is supposed to mean to the community and the impact you think it is going to have to our community. 888-874-4888 is the number to call. I'm not going to say a word. I'm not going to opine. I want you to tell the whole community what you are thinking about this, what the community ought to be thinking about this, and most importantly, what the community ought to be doing about it. 888-874-4888. We should also have a point of reference because we've come to this point many, many times. As we know, Mr. Sessions is not the first U.S. Attorney General to have come to this kind of conclusion. But the conclusion is also not at all unfamiliar to us when it comes to demanding justice from the so-called justice system. There's a hesitancy, an absolute refusal to do the right thing. And suddenly this particular death of Freddie Gray, we actually saw Freddie Gray in the process of dying. When he was loaded into the police van, he was arrested allegedly for having a pocket knife on him. And we saw he was in excruciating pain, unable to walk, and getting little or no assistance, no medical attention, nothing, just thrown into the van like a sack of potatoes. And the next thing we heard within the week was that he was dead of serious spinal cord injury. Ethan from Brooklyn, what are we supposed to take from this decision, this pronouncement yesterday by U.S. Attorney Jeff Sessions?
Greetings, Eutrice.
Hello.
Good to speak to you again. It's been a while.
Thank you.
I first, This is business as usual. We shouldn't have expected anything else from Jeff Sessions, especially since it didn't even come down during the time of Loretta Lynch or the other gentleman there. One of the most disturbing parts about this case to me is how right in front of our eyes they perpetrate the lie that he was damaged in a rough ride in the van. It is absolutely clear, and just as you described it appropriately, he was in distress from the time they picked him up off the ground. If you watch it, his right leg is not moving.
Absolutely.
And if they show the video, they lift him into the van because he couldn't support his own weight on both. He only had one leg that was working, that was functioning. You can't step up into a vehicle with one leg working. And so to bring a charge on the van as if he sustained neck injury in the van, when video clearly shows he sustained neck injury prior to entering the van, no one says this. That's, so it's like we watch this video and then they talk something different than what your eyes are seeing. And and there's no addressing to the point where, why are we charging six? And I mind you, I don't believe, I'm not really sure that like really matters, if those two black officers had anything to do with the apprehension that happened on the street, right? So here you have, let's jump, put these six officers in, four of whom really have nothing to do with it. The brother was, I think one of the black guy was driving the van. So,
yes.
And then they make this, even the prosecutor there, they put on a dog show for us. Make us think, oh, something's going to happen. This prosecutor or this mayor or whoever it is really on top of it. She's going after these cops. We're going to get justice. Well, we already knew from the way that they charged the case, especially when you start talking about the rough van ride, this is going nowhere. If you can't look at this and see that this man was injured, was paralyzed from the time he was apprehended on the ground, because, again, he wasn't limping when he was allegedly avoiding them or when he came out of his house that morning, but he was paralyzed. And the paralysis set in over time, starting
but
from whatever
damage. But let me ask you, because you're giving us, you're talking in a way, you're giving us an analysis of the case, which mm-hmm. we will do. We're not done with this yet. But mm-hmm. I want to know from you, having heard this news, what do you think people should be thinking about Sessions' decision?
About Sessions, Sessions' decision, it's hard for me to answer. Sessions' decision seems to be consistent with who Sessions is, so it's not surprising. What should we be thinking about the fact that this decision happened? This is, again, a reminder that we need to begin to build some type of lack of a better term, hedge. We need an action on our side that's before that it happens, that some type of activity within the community that insulates us, almost like a sub-government of our own, an internal piece that we can operate within our areas before we have to deal with them.
I'm going to introduce you to Nasheed from Westchester. Hello, Nasheed. You're on the air with Ethan from Brooklyn. Nasheed, I want you to answer this question and then converse with Ethan, because you've listened to what Ethan has had to say. Is it correct to just look at Sessions in with this case and his decision, although the decision really was made prior to Sessions taking office? What do you say about that? And it was a black man who made that decision, named Eric Holder.
Holder, that's right.
Nasheed, you gotta come in now.
Yeah.
Let's hear you defend against that.
Okay. We understand about Eric Holder. I think we just got to go back to there's a book called The Vanishing Right to Live, and in that book, the people who will be destroyed by the system were insignificant innocents. We're insignificant and we're innocent, but we got to go. And then the other thing is, Franz Fanon is sacrificial dedication. We're dedicated to a whole lot of things. And I that's all I can say.
Yeah, but that hasn't answered the question. I appreciate the points, and they're very good and relevant points. But we have a situation now where everybody is going to be pointing fingers at Jeff Sessions, who's saying, because he's the U.S. Attorney General, the Department of Justice is not going to pursue prosecution of these six officers in connection with the death of Freddie Gray. I'm saying, okay, that's one thing, but actually that had been said before.
Right.
By Eric Holder. He said, well, you know, I can't see any reason to proceed just yet, but what I would do is do a report. When you can't solve a problem, you write a report.
Right.
So we had a report from a black man, the highest law enforcement officer in the country, who predated Jeff Sessions in coming to this cowardly decision. What's the solution here? I mean, in terms of seeing things in black and white, and the community had been reacting on the basis of being of black and white dynamic. Now, what do you say?
Eric Holder, I mean, since when he was in there, he never did anything. His law situation is similar to the police. He's similar to those people. The police is only it's a policy, and he was going with that policy to not do anything to them.
Could you ask Nasheed a question based on what he has offered us today?
I guess what are our options, since we know that the Fed and the police department are in lockstep? What can we do to mitigate against this mindset of the government as far as our community is concerned? What ideas can we do? What do you think that we can put into place to deal with this?
Thank you. Great question.
We have to clean up our act. I mean, as a people, we have to clean up our act. And that's, I mean, and I don't want to get in, because you walk down the street and you see we're out of sync. We have to, there's too many different things out there that draw us into a bunch of nonsense.
Right.
We really have to clean up our act. I mean, we got to look at it for what it is, what we're doing out there. I mean, from when the chief turns on her program, and she might have this musician or that musician, those people who are younger, they don't know anything about that. And they don't know what they presented. That's what I mean. We got to clean up our act. Our people are rebelling against it. Everything is old school, but it's not old school. So we got to clean up our act. That's all I can say.
I guess the responsibility lies on us old school to make sure we are active and present in bringing the youngsters up with what they don't know, and to have our own institutions with an agenda that we designed by ourselves in place to bring the mindset to the right level, to bring everybody into the proper consciousness, because we're not, you know, I don't want to say we're not anymore. I think at this point in time, we need to find those organizations, because there are organizations and groups that are thinking in this progressive way who want to do things. So it's time to now network those organizations so that a critical mass can be generated, to network those organizations to create an agenda, to assemble agenda of all the like-minded parts of what the I think they share a lot in terms of their approach and information in terms for what would help the community. We get those organizations to meet to create a national agenda of education pieces so that now we can have it dispersed outward and have these programs in whatever little cells that we can, if you will, to now start to push the information out. You know, if it's homeschooling, here's the curriculum. If it's even, you know, it's hard to do things within the system, really. Really, if we're sending our children to public schools, which are designed for failure, then you're going to get what they want it to be designed for. So there would have to be some ancillary, if not primary, educational pieces on the side or front that bring the curriculum that we're talking about. We have enough in our community of our Black intelligentsia that have these curriculums, from Umar Johnson to a variety of people.
But you know what, Nasheed put a question and a challenge and a criticism all wrapped up in one. He put it on the table.
Did I miss it?
He said, we have to clean up our act. So I'm going to ask you, Nasheed, if our act were cleaned up, what would be the reaction to Sessions' decision yesterday?
Hmm.
If we clean up our act, that in one thing, we won't be in those situations where we would have to deal with Sessions or any of them people. Either they don't like you being clean, and they're going to keep this thing going. All the prisons up all over the place. You know, I mean, and we can't have these immoral people in our so-called movement. There's a lot of immoral stuff that's being pushed on our people, and they're accepting it. And they
I have an idea.
Wrong.
I'm sorry.
Ethan, you know, have an idea?
I mean, it's a whole lot of stuff. I mean, I don't know anything, but I walk down the street and I can see it. Now, what Dutrice and you are talking about, if you talk to some people out in the street, they can be 65 years old, and you hit a nerve, you've just adopted a 65-year-old person because they never heard what you're talking about.
Ethan. You were about to say something.
Yeah, in terms of, it kind of goes back to what Nasheed said in the beginning. Sorry if I messed up your name. About
it's Nasheed.
Nasheed.
Yes.
If we were in the proper place, if we were woken up and we would, I think one of our responses would be to analyze the systems that are at work here. So if we're talking about criminal justice system, we'd be looking at who runs the criminal justice system on a commercial side, because this thing's always about money. Money is always an important piece of the capitalist society. So we would be looking at, okay, if this is how you want to function, this is a reactionary, but it's supposed to be proactive in its real inception. We'd be removing ourselves financially from a lot of institutions. And looking to say, this justice system doesn't work. This justice feeds XYZ industries. These industries feed certain media outlets. These industries feed or support the campaigns of 1, 2, 3 politicos, and systematically identify the the daisy chain of all of these institutions and pieces, these mechanisms in that system, and we purposefully remove ourselves from any interaction with any of them, which is really a reaction to this. But if our mindset was correct to begin with, as he was referring to, then we would already be operating in a place where we're not putting our money in any part of the system that supports our oppression. So I think that, you know, I'm thinking along those lines in terms of a reaction to Sessions.
How does that change? How does that change what you just said? And you have many good points there. So do you, Nasheed. But how does that change the dynamic that we've been living with for so long, which is that police routinely get to exercise basically martial law and with impunity? How does that change the relationship of the law to all Americans, and especially to groups who are disproportionately subjected to just this kind of conduct on the part of law enforcement officers?
Well, I think, if I may, a general strike would have a great impact, I think, because, again, if you're having a maybe Pollyanna of me to think of it this way, but again, Nasheed said something about we're attached to too many things, and we need to be able to go into a mode of sacrifice, and that's what it's going to take. If we're beset upon by the system, and this is countrywide, not just our community, but people in general, because the fight here is against the people who want to make everyone else poor, right? So when the people decide to sit down, if you will, and say, we're not taking it anymore, you know, here's our agenda, and we're amassing a new government where we are the government. We are no longer going to feed this beast, and we're going to shut it down and change. The system, the representative system, I think as a concept, is a good system. It's just that it's being corrupted by how money moves through it. But if we were to, as a population of people who are recognize how the system is causing us to suffer, decided that we're putting in a new set of representatives to execute the agenda. We all agree that we want health care. We all agree that we want to be safe streets. We all agree that we want work. We all agree that if we fall in bad times, there should be a safety net. It's not hard to figure out what we all agree on and what we think is a good idea for everybody to have. And from that platform is what the people decide is that we don't need to write new laws every year, every day, from now until the end of eternity. Some things are just standard and obvious. And so when the people decide that they're not going to feed into the distractions, the machineries, the widgets that they put before us to keep us distracted, feed not into the distraction of blaming this person, blaming this country for stealing a job, which is a physical impossibility, or blaming, you know, all of this nonsense, right? Just get people thinking about what are the ideas that would be good, that we all agree on, and that we put people in place to implement these ideas. We need to cut ourselves off of this idea that the people who run this country are smarter than the people who vote them in. And remember that we're the ones who vote them in to do our bidding. We don't vote you in and then you do the bidding of somebody that cuts you a check. Since the vote is what it is, then we're voting you out. Just like this whole move to really implement further voter suppression maneuvers with this crazy commission. So you know, the people have to decide to fight against this, what is really the fascist state. And that's another thing. When people run around using the word fascist as if it's a synonym for racist, and it's not. It's two different concepts. So, you know, even that language there, for what was happening over the past few weeks, people don't understand what's really going on in terms of how they're throwing the words around. So understanding of what terms really are, what they mean, and the impact on what is really impacting our lives daily, and you always talk about it, Utrecht, systems. It's the systems. So the architecture is not necessarily a bad architecture, but it's not the architecture that's actually at work. Democracy is not at work here. You know, it's not
Nasheed,
at work.
Nasheed, did Ethan pick up on your point at all, you think?
You're talking about this system. We got to have our own system. Look here, I'm going to tell you how old I am. I know I've seen a thing when I was a kid where they did not want to see us win. Just a basketball game. They cheated all the way through, but we still won. They don't. There's certain. It's just take like Merriweather. He doesn't have nothing to do with it. But they can't stand to see the fact that he got that money.
Mm-hmm.
There's a group of people in this society that doesn't want to see you with anything. And we got to be aware of that. I mean, there's some good people on here. Don't get me wrong, but I've run into this thing. It just goes, and not only them. There's other people who have come here that don't even know us, and they hate us. But this is a fact. I mean, you know, so how are you going to come to this country? And you're going to call a plumber that's doing some work in another place, and because you wanted a parking space, you're going to call him a beat or something. And you just came out of a so-called of oppression, but you bring your Spanish or your French or your all that stuff with you. And that's how these people are surviving right now, the colonial. What's the name? And Utrecht probably knows it better than I do. But that's how they're surviving, because they left the nonsense there, and we're wallowing in the nonsense and not on progressive things, whether it's in Africa, Australia, or wherever. That's how they plotted this thing.
Well, I want to thank you, Ethan, and Nasheed. This has been a very, very exhilarating exchange of information, and I really love it. And the point of the whole thing was to figure out what people are thinking, and you did the job magnificently. I'm so happy to be in your company. I really, really am. But we will return to the subject, because it requires us to spend some time disassembling the pieces. This pronouncement yesterday should not have shocked us. We knew that more than likely this would be the decision of Jeff Sessions. But what I wanted to get at was for us to understand the racial dynamic here, and also to understand that in a bureaucracy, you have to see past color. Mr. Holder, Eric Holder, had the same decision in several other cases, high-profile cases. The killing of Amadou Diallo, the killing in Ferguson, Missouri, the killing of Freddie Gray. These were all under his tenure. So we have to confront that contradiction. One would think that, well, okay, he would have a particularly pointed interest in these cases, because they're just so, Tamir Rice, we could go down the list, Michael Brown, We just could go down the list. And we see the same pattern of behavior. And we see the same response by the highest black person in an administration. It didn't matter if it was the black president's administration or the white president's administration of Donald Trump. It doesn't matter. We see that when you have a system in place, you don't have to really work too hard at independently inventing new rules. You just go by what's on there. And people can sit now, all three of us could sit right now and project into the future that no matter what the case is, no matter how egregious the conduct of the officers, it would more than likely, if it reaches the level of the U.S. Attorney General, it would more than likely follow the same path. See? That's what we were getting at today. We'll come back to this at another time and fill out the blanks. But this is really what I wanted to get to today. That we need to concentrate on the symbolism here, what we are supposed to learn here. It's not the individual cases. They all have merit. But we're up against a system that no matter what the case is, no matter where it occurs, no matter what the peculiar or special circumstances, it will all turn out the same way. There's a system there. And we've got to get to that system. Thanks for listening. And thanks, Nasheed. And thanks, Ethan, for being such great guides for us today and providing us even deeper thought about the question. And please give some thought to being present and accounted for with our compatriots who are suffering. It doesn't matter how big or small. It matters only that we account for ourselves and that we stand with them in their hour of need. Stay tuned. Coming up next, Ring of Fire. It's a new program and quite exciting, and I hope you enjoy it as well. We'll see each other tomorrow. Thanks for your company. And thanks for making this program so interesting today. Bye-bye.